Welcome to the Friends for the Journey podcast. I'm your host, Catherine Gabriel Jones. On the day that I sat down with my guest, Lori Curtis, a large thunderstorm had stalled over the entire state of Maine. It became an incredibly powerful metaphor as the COVID-19 pandemic continued to rage across the world during the latter part of 2020. And during the course of our conversation, Lori Curtis shared with us the gift of simple understanding. She said, "If something is traumatic, it's trauma." During our conversation, Lori walks beside us as a friend for the journey, and we explored the varieties of landscapes possible in our lives. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. We remain grateful to the Ministering to Ministers Foundation, whose continued support in producing the Friends for the Journey podcast allows us to continue to share meaningful conversations about things in life that really matter in this hectic and busy world. Thank you so much for being with me along this journey, friend. Now, let's get to the show. Thank you very much for sitting down with me today. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
I'm looking forward to it too. My pleasure. Oh,
good. I'm really glad. I thought about it first giving like a little introduction, and then I realized that each time I began an introduction, it mattered to include that I met you at a time when I myself was in the midst of a very dark transition. And you have held a very special place in my heart and in my mind since then. And I'm thrilled to be able to sit down with you and talk with you today.
Well, I am thrilled and honored. And I guess I didn't realize that I had that sort of impact. Yeah.
I love the idea of diving into the deep end of the pool with you.
Okay. You know, I'll try to be prepared and have my flippers on, propel myself to wherever you choose to take me. You throw the rings and I'll go see if I can retrieve them.
Right on. Well, the great thing about the deep end of my pool is that the bottom shifts height. So We can change it however we want.
Okay.
Well, let me ask a first question just to kind of dive in a little bit. And I'm kind of curious, if you were to describe your relationship with hope and resilience, how would you describe that?
My relationship with hope and resilience is really active. I have spent a lot of time in the past with passive hope. And that doesn't lead to a lot of resilience, it seems to me. So I think, in a way, resilience is hope combined with action.
I love that. Resilience is hope combined with action. I'm unfamiliar with, although I kind of understand in that soulful way, what passive hope is. Would you be able to talk a little bit more about that?
Yes, I can try. I think I sometimes felt that I didn't have the power that comes with hope. So it's, you know, like now I wish upon a star.
Yeah.
And that the fairy godmother grants it or whoever grants my wish, you know, and saw prayer sort of that way too. You know, I ask and you deliver on a silver platter. I have learned in life that's not how it works. I think it can work that way sometimes. I think just the activation of putting that appeal out, you know, energetically attracts things to you or leads you to take that action. And it sets the intention that takes you closer to whatever it is that you are hoping for.
Well, there is that longing that's inherent in hope. And whether it's passive or engaged hope, there's that longing of, I don't want to be where I am right now, or mm-hmm. versus that hope of, I'm going to put my hope into this vending machine, or put this prayer into a vending machine, and then I'll get the thing that I, you know, out pops at Coca-Cola or whatever I can include.
Yeah. And hope is one of the positive emotions identified by Barbara Fredrickson that we all need to be healthy. And hope is sort of the negative of the positive emotions, because when we are activating that emotion, mm-hmm. we are not feeling fulfilled, complete. You know, when we're feeling on top of the world, we're not spending a lot of our heart and soul on hope at that point.
Interesting.
It's a bit of a feeling of need. Mm-hmm. You know, you're longing for something that you're not seeing right now, like joy. Mm-hmm. That's something that is present. You're celebrating joy. Hope is not as fulfilling in itself, say, as other positive emotions.
That's an interesting perspective on hope that I had not considered before, which is that hope is something that can best unfold in our lives when we are in relationship, when it in and of itself is in relationship with either a situation or another person, so we can engage with it. Wow. My mind is beautifully blown with the idea of passive hope. And your equation of resilience is hope plus action. Would you be able to just tell our listeners a little bit about the work that you do with trauma and with, well, just all of your great work? You're going to be able to use the words better than I can, because I'm flailing around right now.
Okay. I help people activate change in their lives. Sometimes there's a trauma behind it, and sometimes there isn't clearly a trauma behind it. So in my work as a life coach, you know, for people who are in a pretty good place, looking to get further, to help them activate a change, we start by clarifying what it is they would like to change. And change is a key word here. So you clarify and then create hope. So that sense of hope that change can actually be accomplished, because I've got resources, I've got strengths, I've got talents, and helping them realize what those are. Mm-hmm. So that's the H in change. And then we take action. Once we've identified what it is we want to do, what you've got going for you that boosts that hope, then what action needs to be taken. Okay. And then I help them to navigate any roadblocks, you know, anything that gets in the way of what they want to do. Okay. So we find a way around or through, or, you know, just help that process of navigating stumbling block.
Okay.
And then the G in change, I like to see it as growing the wish a little more, or going forward. And then E is expanding on it even more than they thought they wanted to begin with.
Wow.
So that's the general approach for coaching that I take. And you get into life and, you know, all the little details. Everyone is different. Each person is different. Mm-hmm. And in most of our lives, we encounter traumatic experiences. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have people come to me just for the traumatic experiences, results from traumatic experiences. the way it's affected their lives. And some people are also working with a therapist, and some people are coming just for one specific trauma, or they realize that trauma is affecting their life in general. Yeah. So I do a thorough interview, and we identify all kinds of relationship components and incidents that have happened, and there are all kinds of things that we discuss on there.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. And so we have a process called unblocking that is so thorough at helping get into your deepest knowing and understanding what needs to be done or what happened and what needs to be done. So that's the unblocking process. There are a lot of other things around this, but the big ones are unblocking. Mm-hmm. Every appointment that I have, people reach an end point. So it's not left hanging.
Okay.
So we stick with something until they become extroverted, animated. Sometimes they'll laugh about it and feel a sense of, I know what to do now.
Yeah.
And then the sort of heavier part of what I do is the actual TIR process, traumatic incident reduction. It's kind of an umbrella over a lot of these techniques. And they're all, it's facilitating techniques. When I'm doing coaching, it's Lori Curtis. Mm-hmm. And when I'm doing TIR, I'm the facilitator. I'm delivering this process.
Okay.
I'm not showing my personality. I'm not supposed to nod even. I try not to, but in encouragement, sometimes I can't help it. And so I don't want to be interesting to the person who we refer to as a viewer. So you're viewing your life. You're viewing what happened.
Wow.
And in viewing that, you're seeing greater understanding in it. Mm-hmm. And at the end, you can put a trauma in its place as something that's happened to me. It's part of what's made me who I am. Mm-hmm. It's part of my growth process in life, as horrible as it sometimes is. Mm-hmm. And as a facilitator, I just allow for that process to happen. I facilitate the process. Mm-hmm. And I recognize when they've reached that end point. So it's time to stop. And by doing the training, I got to process all my own little traumas and big traumas. And so I see how effective it is.
Yeah.
And we even have something called future TIR.
Mm.
And I can give an example of that. We were planning to fly in a small plane on our vacation to Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that as it was getting closer, I was petrified. I've flown in jets. I've flown in, you know, small commercial aircraft. Mm-hmm. I've never flown in a smaller plane.
Like a puddle jumper.
Like a puddle jumper. So I was able to take that to my training and express that as something that I realized I get physically sick. I get shaky every time I think about this.
Mm-hmm.
So I started out picturing, I did the future TIR on it. And by the time I was finished, I went from not wanting to get on the plane with my husband and the friends we were going with to smiling my way through it. And then actually when we got to Alaska, there was a plane crash the day before we got there.
Oh,
Nine people were killed. That was from the airport we were planning to take off from.
Oh my.
So that challenged it by quite a bit.
I bet.
And then it was cloudy and the skies just didn't open up enough to allow for it. Mm-hmm. So as soon as we got back, we went to Bar Harbor and did a sightseeing flight over Bar Harbor.
Oh.
And only after we got back on the ground, I remembered that, oh yeah, you know, I once dreaded doing this.
Yeah.
And I was absolutely relaxed the whole time.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
That's so really wonderful.
That, you know, was a success story for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then other traumatic things that, you know, they would make me react unpredictably to something similar because, mm-hmm. you know, it's like Pavlov's dog, you know, you ring the bell. And so with the trauma in my life that I had something that was kind of bothering me for a long time, and I was able to go through that process, and I continue to have exposure to the kind of things that would trigger me before mm-hmm. without any trigger. I have compassion around it now for myself and for the situation and understanding, and it doesn't have the ability to sucker punch me like before.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, and that's an incredibly empowering feeling when we experience the possibility of being equal to the task of living in whatever form that happens to take for us at any given mm-hmm. time.
I think that's our journey, you know, our journeys to
yeah.
just be equal to the task of living and to help other people be equal to their task of living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The objectivity that you include in your traumatic incident, is it trauma incident recovery?
Traumatic incident reduction.
Thank you. Yeah. In the traumatic incident reduction, that objectivity seems to hold a certain implacability in how supportive knowing and that knowledge can be, because there is the emotional pull and the emotional effect. And then there is also that, it's easy to say intellect, but there's a certain objectivity in just the facts, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of resonates with the family systems that Ministering to Ministers first taught me about, and how helpful it can be to see objectively the different relationships and the qualities and impacts on the relationship, and how we are a part of a network of events. We are not the cause of all of the events.
Mm-hmm. And TIR approaches that sort of from the inside out. You know, the TIR process, there's no time limit. So when I don't schedule it for an end time, so it's open ended and it takes as long as it takes.
Okay.
And
yeah,
it can be very taxing. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't just jump into it. You do other work around it first to prepare you for doing that heavy, you know, revisiting. You're actually starting at the beginning of the incident. Where were you? Who was there? What was it like? And then you go through it, and then you start over again and you do it again. So it's a process that you don't have to be a therapist to do. It's for clergy, it's for rescue responders. They do a lot with people who work in hospitals and firefighters and police. And so it was something that I found out from a coaching client who benefited from it, from someone I had referred her to as a therapist.
Oh, wow.
And then she came back. She first came back saying, I can't even believe this. You know, this was just amazing. You know, they did this. She did this process called TIR. And then the next time she said, you need to do this.
Oh, wow.
You have to be a therapist. And so I looked into it, and there is a TIR Association of Maine. So I could get the instruction it's not just instruction, it's a process. And I've been working for a few years now under supervision in the certification process. So yeah, it's a
that's wonderful.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing to have. And most of the people who do it are therapists because they found that it is more effective than a lot of the techniques they were using before they learned TIR. So
yeah. We're going to take a quick break. The subject of our conversation today provides a perfect opportunity to share this brief message from a person who attended a Healthy Transitions retreat that was hosted by the Ministering to Ministers Foundation.
I will always treasure the connections and friendships I gained when I connected with the Ministering to Ministers organization in attending the Healthy Transitions retreat in Decatur in 2018. At that time, although I hadn't been through a termination, I was developing some patterns of ministerial PTSD from a series of negative church experiences. I reached out to the organization in more of a preemptive way because I was seeing things in myself I wanted to keep from developing into a deep jadedness. The retreat was wonderful. I gained a lot of things that I put in my tool bag, but really, the biggest takeaways from it were not meditations, ruminations, methods, or magic formulas. They were more overarching concepts, and I want to share with you what they are. They're simple things that you all know, but sometimes it takes an immersive community experience like this retreat to remind you of things you already know. First, the retreat reminded me that I am not alone. And yes, from a spiritual posture, we all know this. I sat and heard the human-to-human stories of hurt, betrayal, abandonment, and how peers across multiple denominations navigated the pathways to healing, or at least how to live with the scars. I wept with those who wept. I mourned with those who mourned. And I knew the feelings of bitterness that I carried around like a suitcase were not unique to me, as I saw the luggage of everyone else, and I knew that I was not alone. Did I solve any grand psychological damage for myself then? No. But I got to love on a group of people of whom I understood their hurt and saw their love back towards me. And my great cloud of witnesses grew by a few souls, and I learned to appreciate their cheers in the darker times to come. The second major takeaway from me was learning not to be afraid to ask for help. I had always thought that counseling was a waste of time and a sign that my faith may not have been strong enough. My biggest ministry and personal challenges actually didn't happen until after the retreat, sadly. One could argue that going to the retreat didn't really prevent anything from happening. But that wasn't really the goal of why I went. And partially because I went to the retreat, I learned not to be afraid of talking to an experienced counselor about my baggage. So when things really fell apart for me in the year after the retreat, I had the wherewithal to know that I was in over my head and to ask for help. I saw a counselor for several months, which helped me to regain my bearings. And I probably would not have considered that an option before the retreat. In this last year, in a new ministry and a new community, despite the fact that COVID has reinvented our world, I have more of a peace than I have had in years. I still have baggage, I still have bitterness, and I do wake up often thinking about the people that have hurt me and my family in the past. But then I thank God for His peace and for allowing me to have the great cloud of witnesses made up of the hurt, abandoned, and broken ministers in the kingdom that are persevering because organizations like Ministering to Ministers continue to do what they do.
Confidentiality matters to everyone at the Ministering to Ministers Foundation. If you or someone you know is a minister or clergy person in crisis, please reach out. Contact information is available in the show notes. You are not alone. Now let's get back to the conversation with Lori. I think about the foundation that produces this podcast, Ministering to Ministers, has dedicated their first 25 years to really providing support for clergy who have been wounded or traumatized in the course of their call. And it's bizarre, the wounding that occurs where a minister is told for a variety of reasons, either they aren't increasing the membership enough, or they didn't like a sermon that they gave, or will be told that they're done and they have to move out of the parsonage, and, oh, you have children, well, that's just too bad. And that kind of wounding is not limited to clergy, but it's all people who give of themselves in their work through either a vocational call or because they happened to end up in a grocery store working as a grocery store clerk, and suddenly there's a pandemic and you could be the only friendly face that your customer sees. And so Ministering to Ministers wants to open up their arms to all people who really experience these wounds. And how wonderful to have that perspective of the traumatic incident reduction to entertain, providing the solid ground that you can stand on in your own life. So, a question for you. Reflecting back on our initial conversation about hope and resilience, how do you imagine, or how do you see that hope and resilience can help us either identify the trauma that's occurred? Because oftentimes that emotional or that soulful wounding, well, it doesn't bleed. Nothing's physically broken. I'm not bruised, so it must not be trauma. I guess I'm not entirely sure how to ask the question, but I'm wondering, what kind of a relationship do you see between hope and recovering from trauma?
I think the first step is action. When you decide something's affecting my ability to be effective in life, and I need to get some help being effective in life, you might not realize it's from trauma at all.
I
can say that for myself, and I think that for many, many people, it's that little thing that won't go away that has made you feel less than capable. Or that's put you on guard against something that, you know, you're walking along and you're tripping over something in your path that happened 10 years back or something like that, because you don't feel capable to successfully navigate this stone in the path or something. Because it's too similar to something that you stumbled on before, or you fell flat on your face and broke your nose, and you know. Sometimes it's really clear. Sometimes people just know, you know, they had some sort of, you know, an attack or a death or something really significant happened that everyone in the world recognizes is trauma. And for other people, it could be something as, you know, seemingly benign as, you know, a hangnail or, you know, it's really subjective what trauma is for anyone. I can't tell you what your trauma is. And you can't tell me what my trauma is. If something's traumatic, it's trauma. Or if it's keeping you back, it could very well be trauma. And that's something that I had not really thought about, you know. And sometimes you don't even know what it is until you start talking. That's largely what it is. Just exploration, you know, tell me about, You know, when is the first time? Mm-hmm. When does it happen or happen? There are just different approaches depending on what it is.
Yeah.
So, and it's very prescribed. So mm-hmm. I'm not winging any of this. I'm following protocols.
Yeah.
The trauma side of things.
I'm so glad that you include that there are those protocols. There are those steps, you know, mm-hmm. in the same way that in family systems, when there is, for instance, an emotionally abusive relationship, that's a particular type of line that connects those two people. And to have, again, the support of that objectivity can really help to peel back that backtalk that we sometimes hear in our own mind, which says, you know, it's really not that bad. You're really making a mountain out of a molehill. Mm. While for a person who has no sense of security in the job that they're doing, upon which their entire family depends, that's a certain amount of stress that is continued and pervasive. To have that stress constantly extended and to always have that weight, that can become a thorn that we don't realize. Mm-hmm. I love that you include that it's easy for us as human beings to compare, but pain is a lot like rain. Everybody gets wet. Mm-hmm. We can't compare the raindrops.
All the work that I do for coaching, for TIR, I also do life stress reduction, which is a lighter version of TIR, is based on your heart, how you feel, and no one else's feeling about it mm-hmm. comes into play.
Okay, yeah.
With me. And there are times when it's a relationship and, you know, you might try to think what the other person's thinking, mm-hmm. but there's no way to know. So we focus on the individual, your heart, your authenticity, your intention, your reason for being.
Yeah.
You know, what was the intent when you were created? Mm-hmm. And how can you fulfill that and get these encumbrances out of the way?
Yeah. Wow. That is nice. Because of the pandemic and because of the changes that we're experiencing, these tectonic shifts, the world may not look the same again. And so we're in the midst of this lasagna of trauma with all of these different layers of upheaval that we're experiencing. I'm just kind of beautifully enthralled with the power of the objectivity that you bring to bear and how objectivity and telling one story, they are not opposing forces. They can both exist at the same time and they support one another.
I agree. Yes.
Wow.
And I think key to life, you know, there are a couple of things like shining light on it. You know, if anything is kept in the dark, you're going to trip over it. You know, we talked about a landscape and a path, you know, I know you like to use that metaphor. And on Saturday, we were navigating a path after dark, and there are roots to climb over. There are stones, there are deep ditches. And when we walked in, it was easy because there was light. Mm-hmm. And so my advice is bring in light as much as you possibly can through, you know, positive emotions, through faith, through bringing a friend for the journey helps to light the way. Yeah. I see that as sort of a separate thing, to have friends along on the journey. And it could be somebody that you consider your buddy already, or it could be family, or it could be just strangers who have the capacity to help you.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful.
They can help you carry things. You can hold on to them while you're climbing over something. You know, once in a while, they can just carry you.
Yeah.
And if necessary. Or they can say, duck, you know, there's a low-hanging branch ahead.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought in all of these metaphors. Boy, you know the way to my heart. Wow.
I do. I figured that out. Yeah. Queen of metaphors.
And that brings to mind a question that rises in my head, kind of like a balloon. And I'd love to run it past you for your thoughts. Ministering to ministers, and I think every organization that seeks to support others who are in need. How do I want to phrase this? It's easy to encourage another person to reach out when they feel like they're in the dark, or when they're lost, or when they're trapped in that cycle of passive hope. So, or what would you have to say in response to someone who says, well, if you're sad, just reach out. All you have to do is reach out. How would you respond to someone who really just reinforces to someone who's hurting, well, you just have to reach out? Is it possible for someone who is kind of lost and hurting to reach out, or do they need someone to reach in?
I think if they're already on that path to resilience, if they've activated some of that hope, they're more apt to reach out. Mm-hmm. I think if you are the person who is advising someone to just get help, mm-hmm. if you're close enough to advise them to just get help, you can be that friend on the journey to say, get help by, you know, they might not have the ability to find that help. Mm-hmm. And if you have the ability to advise them to get help, hopefully you can assist them. So many times they're not even able to act after being pointed towards something.
Yeah.
So if you can just be the buddy by the, you know, by their sides, mm-hmm. or if you can take them by the hand, mm-hmm. or if you can put your arm around their shoulder, I'm using mm-hmm. metaphors again, you know, bring them, take them, you know, carry them, whatever they're in need of.
Yeah.
And sometimes you've got a couple of people who are both in that mm-hmm. space. So you might not, you know, if you too are feeling incapable of taking action on hope, mm-hmm. then it's harder to help someone else.
Yeah.
You need to help yourself first, like the oxygen mask in the plane.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know?
So if you... if you're in a relationship with someone who is really struggling, mm-hmm. you need to make sure you're able to help them mm-hmm. first, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's a little self-assessment you can do.
You can, back to the importance of that objectivity.
Mm-hmm. So you can look at yourself first mm-hmm. and, you know, how active is my hope? How resilient am I?
Wow.
And do some work for yourself so that you can get a little stronger. It doesn't have to be anything big. Mm-hmm. One thing I like to really like to do is just a loving kindness meditation to myself. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't cost anything. And it is so powerful. And I do it for myself. I do it for my loved ones. I do it for everybody mm-hmm. and then everything. And it just is so uplifting and empowering. And it changes your attitude toward the person that you're doing it about, just because you have that sense of loving care, loving kindness about them in general, because you've practiced it.
Yeah.
So I like that. And I also like using heart math when you practice breathing in and out of your heart, and gives your heart an opportunity to have coherence with your brain, mm-hmm. so that those deepest feelings from your highest heart is where that deep knowing comes from, not your brain. And that facilitates that interaction that creates coherence in your nervous system, you know, between your heart and your brain. So it clarifies your decision making, it reduces stress, it makes things work, takes you out of flight or fight mode, and you know, helps you rest and digest and figure out what it is that comes next. So I use the tools and
again, there is that beautiful resonance of bringing in some light in the dark path, having someone there to spot you, remembering that you're not alone in this dark path in the woods. Wow. What is something that you would love to share with our listeners about these words that you have helped me redefine in this new way, in my mind, in my imagination, of entertaining that radical hope that I've always talked about can be passive and just lay there, but it can also be this active force in your life. So is there anything that you would like to just include about resilience and hope?
What comes to mind is how it has to be intrinsic. Mm-hmm. It has to come from you. And I mean, some people need help even getting to that point. As simple, though, as sitting and listening to your heart, be still and know, you know, just be still, just be.
Yeah.
And see what comes up. And we are so busy trying to please others, trying to do, trying to think, trying to produce, or trying to, you know, struggling to survive, that, you know, if you can just be first, you can figure out what you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And if you feel, you can then think about what you have to do.
Yeah.
So it flips everything. There's actually a book called Be, Feel, Think, Do. And so we are all so busy doing that sometimes we're not even thinking. And we're so busy doing and what little thinking that we're doing that we're not allowing ourselves to feel.
Yeah.
And then through all that activity, we're missing that being that leads to knowing how we feel.
Oh, wow.
And we grow up pleasing other people.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first steps, I think, is to, okay, you know, yes, there are all these other people. What does Catherine, who is Catherine? You know, what does Catherine want? What does Catherine need? Mm-hmm. And it takes time. It takes being.
Yeah.
It takes being still. And nature is a wonderful environment for that.
Yeah.
Or just any place where you can just get really comfortable and feel like your heart is capable and ready to share its wisdom.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And that resonates so deeply with that sense of, there is the faith in that society ascribes to the faith in a higher power. And then there is the faith in one's relationship with what one sees as the sacred. And when sometimes when those soulful wounds occur, when that trauma hits us in that dark, in that private, intimate, soulful place, it can cause this vacuum that can open up inside us. And you're so right. Being still can sometimes be fraught with difficulty when our hearts feel wounded.
And we forget that the sacred is even there.
Yes.
Like that balloon. It's like the sacred drifted away.
Yeah.
And we're, you know, we're inspired, you know, by spirit in our hearts. Mm-hmm. And to be still and reconnect with that is, I think, the biggest gift you can give yourself.
Yeah.
And realize that you're not separate.
Yeah.
You're one with your creation and mm-hmm. your highest possibilities and yeah. everything in between.
Yeah. It's so helpful. I mean, all of these beautiful petals in this bouquet that you have provided for us today, and each one of these flowers holds within it petals of wisdom and insight, the recognition of the difference between passive hope and active, engaged hope, that beautiful equation of resilience is hope plus action. That objectivity can provide us this insight that can give us legs to stand on. The fact that we don't have to be alone, even when we find ourselves comparing the lack of bruises on our soul that we see on our soul and the bruises we see on someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Wondering if I could ask one of my favorite questions, which is, if you could go back in time to tell your previous self something, what time would you go back to and what would you say to your previous self?
I did this once a long time ago. And, you know, when I think about it, when I've thought about it, because I thought you might ask that question, I didn't answer the way I'm going to answer now.
Oh, I love the way that our lives change and unfold.
Yeah. But I'm answering the way I answered back then. It would be when I was like 2 years old, 1 year old, 3 years old, and to tell that little girl that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, preach.
And that life is growth.
Yeah.
We don't know all the answers today that we need for tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it's permission to be human. Just be who you can be in this moment, knowing that you'll have what it takes to be who you're going to be given the next moment.
Yeah.
Assurance that it's okay and that you're not alone on the journey.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, I can speak from personal experience that you reminded me of that. Even if we can't see where the road becomes smooth, we also can't see around the bends and we can't see over the crests. And sometimes we're surprised by how the road changes. Lori, are there resources that you would love to include for our listeners? And I would love to include links in the show notes of your website and also information about traumatic incidence reduction. But are there some resources that you would love to share?
Oh, there are many, actually. I think the positive psychology training that I have received and certifications that I've received have been the most influential in my life, to look at what have people done to overcome things successfully and how can I do more of that? What does it take? It's now a science that has been around for quite a long time. And, you know, realizing you need positive emotions, mm-hmm. you need roughly 3 positives for every negative in your days. If you're in a relationship with someone, that relationship needs roughly 5 positives for every negative that is happening in engagement between the two of you. And you need to be engaged in life. You need to have those things that you can get into flow with, a hobby or something challenging, just challenging enough that it keeps you going, doesn't discourage you.
Yeah.
But like, you know, for some people it might be knitting, for others it might be building sandcastles. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be anything. Learning is a great way to stay engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And relationships, to have at least one really strong relationship in your life, and it can even be with yourself.
Mm.
If you're really introverted, if you can just cultivate that strong relationship with yourself, that can be enough.
Yeah.
And you want someone to who thinks the world of you, that the sun rises and sets on you. Mm-hmm. And who better than yourself?
Yeah.
So, and it, you know, the loving, caring, giving, sharing, if you've got that in your life, that's going to give you more of those positive emotions that are so good to have. And meaning, finding a connection to something bigger than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It can be whatever it is for you. You know, for some people it's being green, for some people it's a religion, for some people it's a political action. Just, you know, for some people it's a volunteer experience.
Mm-hmm.
To a cause that they believe in. But finding meaning is important. And then accomplishment, you know, every day to feel like you have accomplished something. Yeah. Maybe it's getting through the day, you know, and maybe it's making a cake or having a sense of achievement or accomplishment is vital to wellness and being whole. So...
Oh, that's so powerful. And I'm so glad you brought that in. It that resonates again with what we talked about with comparison, that when the path becomes shadowed and feels broken, it's easy for that accomplishment to be, must be, I must learn Spanish. I must lose 15 pounds. I must get another job right away. Sometimes those accomplishments can be something as simple as this really inspiring post I saw on Tumblr, which was, did you eat food today? Great. Well done.
Mm-hmm.
Did you take your medication today? Awesome. You did 2 fantastic things.
Yeah.
And to kind of chunk it down in the same way that a marathon runner will place a mark of a signpost. And once they hit that signpost, awesome. They won that little accomplishment. And that is fantastic.
I have one more thing that I've really enjoyed focusing on, and that is character strengths.
Oh, it's yes.
Your values in action, the VIA character strengths. So we could also include a link so that people can find out what their signature strengths are. It's my professional site. It's free. And if they have any questions, they can shoot me an email and I will help them find the significance in their signature character strengths and how to best work with them.
Yeah.
So that's one of the backbones of positive psychology as well, along with positive emotions, engagement, relationships, meaning, accomplishment.
Thank you so much for including that, because you're absolutely right. The values in action, the VIA, inspires a level of imagination and objectivity that both weave together quite beautifully.
And your top strengths are energizing. Mm-hmm. If you're struggling with something, and you know what those are, you can just play a little game with yourself and go do something with one of those strengths. And it's empowering, it's energizing, it's easy, it's fun.
Yeah.
And that's helpful.
It is. To entertain this objective quiz that you take that tells you you are filled with love. You are grace incarnate. Your creativity soars through the air, can reignite that belief in oneself. Oh, Lori. Oh, wow. Lori, I am so grateful for your time today. Thank you so much for being a friend for the journey.
Thank you for inviting me. It's been fun.
Thank you for listening to Friends for the Journey. If you like what you've heard today, please leave us a review on iTunes so others can discover that they, too, have friends for the journey. And whether this is your first visit with us or you're a longtime friend, welcome. Be sure to follow us so you never miss an episode. This podcast is dedicated to everyone who helps others along their road. Think of the journey taken this past week and all those who helped ease the road. Providing food when there is hunger. Offering a moment of inspiration when doubt lingers nearby. Encouraging when the burden of addiction feels too heavy to carry alone. A caring touch of hand and heart when injury and illness strikes. Guidance and mentoring while learning new things. An unexpected smile we can see in the eyes of someone. You help so many people along their own journey. This podcast is dedicated to you. Friends for the Journey is a production of the Ministering to Ministers Foundation. Since 1995, Ministering to Ministers advocates for clergy and their family who have been wounded during their ministry, providing care for mind, heart, body, and spirit. They're easy to find on the web. Just go to ministeringtoministers.org or click on any of the links in the show notes. I'm your host, Catherine Gabriel Jones. Your friendly comments and notes are welcome. Just go to Gabriel Jones Coaching and click Contact Catherine. I'm always looking for new guests to sit down and talk about hope, resilience, and the unexpected surprises that encounter us in life. Thank you so much for joining me along this journey. I'll let the music play you into the rest of your day. Enjoy the song as you make your way along the journey, friend. I look forward to seeing you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.